on episode 4 of PTB NXT, NXT Arise.
I'm ready.
It's a dangerous love affair. Can't be scared when it goes down. Got a problem, tell me now. Only thing that's on my mind is who's gonna run this town tonight. We gon' run this town.
We are, yeah, I said it, we are. This is Rock Nation.
Welcome to a chronological exploration of the Black and Gold brand. This is We Are PTB NXT. And on this episode, it's a big episode because NXT arrives tonight. And they are over the top now. And speaking of over the top, let me introduce my two partners in crime on this podcast. The Alex Riley and Alex Riley of Place to Be Nation. Tim Capel and Jennifer Smith. How you guys doing? How you holding up?
I'm good. I got my dude wipes. I'm doing well. Taking care of business. How about you, Jake?
I'm doing okay. I'm holding in there. The homeschooling thing. I'm surviving it. Trying to anyway. We're still doing spring break. So, like, once if I can make it through this week, technically I don't have to teach my kid next week because it's spring break and we don't have to do anything. Right. So I'm trying to make it this spring break. Staying stocked on my essentials, my dude wipes, what have you. Mm-hmm. But I'm hanging out.
Extra large standard size dude wipes?
I think an extra medium is my size.
Very good. Yes. I mean, it's a precious commodity these days. And
yes,
as we were discussing off air before, apparently the best kept secret of hemorrhoidal flushable wipes are now running commercials. So everyone is going to know about them. And I'm giving away trade secrets here on this podcast with our thousands upon thousands of listeners. You can't find toilet paper, but in my case, that hasn't been so much a problem because I enjoy moist flushable wipes. Moist there.
Thank you. Say for that.
In case you didn't get that part, which, you know, you find in the toilet section aisle, toilet paper section aisle, but you can find the medicated hemorrhoidal wipes and the more first aid, pain reliever aisle. So that's going to be set off from the toilet paper aisle, which is super mobbed, of course, but you'll still find plenty of those until people catch on, which I have a feeling they're going to.
Like, but Tim, if you don't have hemorrhoids, does it give you hemorrhoids? Like, I don't...
No.
Is that a risk that you take?
You will not have a sympathetic hemorrhoidal reaction,
Okay, very good. All right.
That's just
a relief.
Tim, I feel like you could be like these people in the news that are... they show up and they're like experts on very specific topics and situations like this.
This is what the press should be asking Donald Trump.
Like when you're in hour three of the local news in the morning, they're bringing in like, you know, the guy who helps you budget, that type of thing. You can be the,
these are not the Dr. Fauci questions. These are the Tim Cape questions, which are quite some distance between the two.
Hygiene expert, Tim Cape.
Tim Cape.
To help you. Yes. With all your needs during quarantine.
But ass wiping expert, if nothing else.
This should be a running thing as long as this is going on.
We could have an
episode tip on how to make it through quarantine, how to like quarantine hacks, like hemorrhoid
I love
wipes.
It. Let's do All right. it.
Yep. All right. So we'll keep track. This one was hemorrhoid wipes. Good for everyone. Wipes.
Good job.
Yep. Hopefully we don't see on the news like with so many other things right now, like there's going to be a shortage of hemorrhoid wipes, and then the people who are afflicted with hemorrhoids are going to have a shortage. Let's hope. Yeah.
But, I mean,
what
that's
a tribute to that, though. You know, it's a lot of responsibility with these hacks.
That's true. That said, I mean, I was on the moist flushable wipes train long before this toilet paper shortage situation started. Okay. So
right. But nobody cares about that, though.
For years and years. And I mean, like, I can't find necessarily the brand I would normally use right now, but I'll settle for the medicated store brand, whatever, you know, over there next to the preparation H and everything else.
We'll have to make sacrifices sometimes.
Yeah.
You're a hero, Tim.
But I mean, that is how the revolution is going to start, is when people severely afflicted with hemorrhoids can no longer find the hygienic products that they need, because it's very important. And that's, you know, a more vulnerable population, I think, than your everyday person who wipes their ass with dry paper like an animal.
Well, speaking of best kept secrets, NXT, I think, as of this episode, is going to go from the dark corners of WWE.com, and it will no longer be a secret because now we'll be on the brand new, on our timeline, as of February 2014, on the WWE Network, which this show that we are diving into tonight is the first live wrestling event on the new at the time WWE Network. Tim, do you have any memories of the network launch?
Yeah, I was a first day subscriber. So I remember like getting up that morning and being really excited. It was like Christmas Day as an adult. And turn it on to see that it's very glitchy and very laggy, of course. Like all these services are the day of launch, right? I mean, it's kind of to be expected. Remember Disney Plus, which 6 years later, we're still kind of dealing with same issues. It takes a while to work. You can't say. So yeah, I remember just kind of playing around with it that morning. I think I might've even, cause it launched on like a Wednesday or Thursday. I want to say it was in the middle of the week. And, I don't know. I could be wrong about that. I know it was a weekday.
No, you're right. I think it was except for like a Tuesday or Wednesday or something. Yeah.
Something like that. And I feel like I took the day off or just went in late because I just wanted to nuts around on the WWE Network. And and the first few days of launch, they were pushing this show, this NXT arrival, pretty hard, actually. There were a few little promo clips that they did, you know, on some of the just Raws and SmackDowns, they were building it up. Of course, you had a had we done Elimination Chamber? That was going to be after this, right? So,
I think so. I know the first WWE main roster pay per view was WrestleMania 30 because there was a big push for it, and I think it was very shrewd of them to do this show first because it's a lot more controlled. It's kind of in Full Sail, which is almost, it's like a studio setting. So not like on location trying to do this in a big stadium yet. I thought it was really shrewd of them to test it out in this smaller low key setting to kind of work out the kinks of how you like broadcast something like this.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing too, is like they were really early at this also. Like they're kind of ahead of the curve with like other sports and things like that when it came to the whole over the top and doing everything streaming. Like, I don't think you can really overstate how big of a deal it felt like that you could just go and find these obscure. I mean, they don't even seem obscure now because it's so easy to get with the network. But I remember like the first thing I put on was some like In Your House from like 1995 because I just wanted to see like, okay, can I really just go on here and click this and have this entire show in like fantastic quality too.
Because it's I did all that
from
with,
their yeah.
I did that with 1995 WCW pay-per-views, of course. Yeah.
Of course you did.
I spent a few days watching like a lot of them, just for no reason. But
for
yeah,
the best reasons.
For the best reasons. Yeah, I remember now. So they had already done Elimination Chamber as a traditional pay-per-view, but it was available day one of launch on the network. Because there was some question of, are they really going to have all the pay-per-views? Like, they just did Royal Rumble. They just did Elimination Chamber. And they were like, no, you're just getting everything. All, you know, day you subscribe, day you sign up, they'll all be there. And, yeah, because I remember not watching that live, but being able to watch it, you know, pretty soon after they had run it. So that was kind of cool.
And I think as like a big fan, it was kind of like I think the whole NXT thing kind of flew under the radar, because I think if you were like a hardcore wrestling fan, the archive like really sold you on it. And then kind of like current fans who maybe aren't as hardcore, like, you know, like casual fans, I guess is the word. Like, you could watch all the pay-per-views now, the current pay-per-views, for like $10 a month. Like, I didn't even know if anybody much at the time was even that worried about what original stuff would be exclusive to the network. Like, probably I don't even not. Know. If, yeah, I don't even know if people were that worried. It was kind of all just like extra, like bonus. And so I think this kind of flew under the radar a little bit at the time.
You know, I'm realizing how privileged I've been and how spoiled I've been to have always had the network in my fandom life. So it's you know, hearing you guys talk about it, I'm like, wow, that must have like been amazing. Because I can't imagine, like, just everything I know, it's always been there. So interesting to hear that point of view.
It was certainly a game changer. I mean, I hadn't purchased a actual pay-per-view since, I mean, I couldn't even tell you. Like, I had seen some WrestleManias, but did I pay money for them? So when this launched, it was like, oh, 10 bucks a month, that's nothing. And even if they didn't, even if they had not included all of the pay-per-views in WrestleMania, I still would have signed up really just for the archive.
That makes sense.
It was like worth it to you that much, especially back then when you were really starved for that kind of thing. And, you know, people talk about how maybe that was a misstep in the, like, from the launch to say you're really getting everything here and there's not going to be any tiers. You're not going to have to pay extra or go outside of this service for something like a WrestleMania or SummerSlam. But I don't know. That ship has kind of sailed. It's going to be hard to put the toothpaste back in the tube, as they say.
You're right.
But that's something they're talking about. So anyway. Yeah.
But I think this is obviously a big show for NXT, because it's kind of their first go at putting on something of this magnitude. And it's not a huge show. They're still a Full Sail. It's not in a huge arena or anything, but it's still just, I'd say, probably the biggest spotlight that's been on them. Because to think not long before this, they were basically not that far from like Tough Enough or something like that. So they weren't even considered like an actual wrestling entity. It was more of a reality show. So this is a big show. But
yeah, and you know, this we talked about it on our last episode. We're now really getting into the transition of NXT from it. You know, it went from the reality show, the kind of weird bullshit variety show contests, like Tough Enough, as you were saying, and then it became really just a showcase, so to speak, for their developmental system. And the TV we've kind of watched to date, with the exception of maybe the last, I don't know, 2 weekly TV episodes, it's really been concerned with character development, right? They're not building to events or even matches per se beyond just a, oh, we're going to see you know, this feud play out next week in a such and such kind of match. And you're like, okay. And it'd be real hit and miss.
I mean, kind of Sami Cesaro and kind of Dallas Neville for those bigger matches.
I think that's where it really started, is the matches on this event, Arrival, that actually do have a build to them. Those are the ones that have had a story where you are seeing like some real stakes and some expectations, you know, beyond just develop your character and learn on the job, which a lot of the NXT that we've been watching has been these dudes learning on the job. And now we're getting into, you're being expected to really perform and in a lot of cases excel on the job. So it's a shift in their identity. And I think that's going to be a slow evolution that we will track here.
Yeah, for sure. I think you could start to see that there is like a bigger plan in place for everything. Like that they have somewhere they want to go week to week, that they're building towards something. And like, somebody is paying close attention to it, like what's happening for sure. All right, which brings us to the opening of the show, which, speaking of who's in charge of this, Triple H comes out for the intro, Papa H, as I call him sometimes. He comes out basically to do a quick intro in the ring to say that this is NXT and that the next generation is now. It was pretty quick. Good enough. He's obviously been positioned as kind of a figurehead, but I think this for sure kind of, if you weren't already in the know, I think it kind of hints to you that he is more than just an on-screen figurehead for NXT, that he's a little bit more involved than, you know, just showing up on camera.
Yeah, and it gives it more of that, I don't want to say big time feel, but it does give them some cred to have. I mean, we've seen them on the weekly stuff, but this is their coming out party on the network now, where it's actually got some hype behind it. It's their first live event on this new service. They know a lot of people are going to be watching this product for the first time. I can remember watching it live, and I hadn't seen a ton of NXT. Like, I'd watched very little, really, up until this point, watching Arrival live and just seeing Triple H come out. I'm like, all right, yeah, they're giving this a good solid push. Like, they are taking this very seriously and acknowledging that they're going to have some new viewers just through the curiosity factor alone. So let's see what they can do with this.
And then later on in the show, one of Triple H, one of his friends, his buddies, comes out to give a little cameo. So I think that also speaks to his involvement in the promotion.
Yeah, we get a few of these types of appearances throughout the show.
Yeah, you can definitely tell they feel the need to like inject it with some names to give it some cred, like Tim said, for sure. All right, so we have our commentary team, because we've kind of bounced around commentary on TV the past couple of months, but I would consider this, of everybody we've seen on commentary so far on TV, this would be, like, if I had to pick three people, this would be my top three. So we have Tom Phillips, not Todd Phillips, director of The Hangover.
Right.
We have William Regal, who we've gushed about since we started doing these. And then we have Byron Saxton, who I think we've kind of crapped on a little bit throughout these, maybe not as much as some other people we've had, but we'll see as we go on. But I thought he did pretty decent on this show. But
I have thoughts about commentary, but we'll get there.
Okay.
I'm just glad we've got Regal.
Same. Yes.
Tom Phillips, I mean, he's fine. I have definitely dumped on Byron, but yeah, this is, again, they're realizing 4 out of 10 Sai is not going to cut it on an Arrival big showcase production. If we get lots of very insulting, demeaning Meltzer nicknames throughout the show, by the way.
Yes.
You know, unusually insulting as well. so this is their equivalent of an A team as far as the commentators go. I would agree.
And I think Tom Phillips has been. I think Tom Phillips has been pretty solid. Yeah, yeah. I think he's been pretty solid. Like, he hasn't blown me away, but I don't find he's been like actively bad or anything.
Right.
I agree.
Yeah. All right. So right out of the gate, we have a super hype match that we've been building to, which is Sami Zayn versus, I guess, still with the first name, Antonio Cesaro. Mm-hmm. So already we see the entrances are a lot more grandiose on this than what we've been seeing on NXT TV. You could see that they kind of amped up the production. They have a lot more screens and lighting and stuff like that than what we normally see on NXT TV. I thought they did a good job of making it feel a lot bigger than it did. Did you guys notice that?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. And something else to be said for Full Sail. I mean, I know we sort of take issue with those crowds today, but you have to give it to them. In 2014, this is a very dedicated, like, Mark fan base. Mm-hmm. You know they're going to be very forgiving. Even if they're not seeing the best stuff in the world, they're always enthusiastic, if nothing else. So that's a good kind of crowd for a debut showcase event for NXT and what NXT was in 2014.
I love a full sale crowd. I mean, they're always all about it, and that's how I feel about NXT all the time. So I'm just like, yeah, they're doing the right thing.
Yeah, and I think because, as we see, we're getting a little bit higher quality than we normally get on the TV, the crowd responds to it for sure. Because we've kind of said, well, the crowds have not always been what we would consider like NXT hype, but they also haven't really been putting out anything to make the crowd go wild, where we'll see them. That's going to change. So Cesaro, kind of weird, because he's still in the We the People deal, like the We the People gimmick. So I thought it was kind of strange because he has the, what's that called? Like the Gadsden flags, like huge, like the Don't Tread on Me deal.
Yes.
Like on all the screens and stuff, which is kind of odd considering who Cesaro is. Mm-hmm. Like it seems kind of weird because he seems so European, and that seems like such an American kind of, like.
It's one of those things that it's like you had to be there for it, right? Like for us, we just sort of take it for granted, sort of remember that phase of his career. But I feel like somebody coming along who never knew about the whole Zeb culture, real American Jack Swagger and Cesaro team and all that stuff that they were doing would be like, what is this? It's like, why is he?
Yeah, and luckily they did not.
Alt-right guy coming out.
Yeah, like luckily Zeb did not factor into this feud. Uh-huh. It's like I feel like Cesaro's got to do it because it's just kind of like the We the People little hand on the chest thing. Like he's got to do it because it's kind of like his taunt right now, but it doesn't play into this feud, thankfully. Mm-hmm. But it was just weird to kind of see the juxtaposition of that with his character. But I was really hyped going in this match. I think they built it really well, like we've talked about in the last episode with the promos and stuff. And two things I always want is that I care who wins, and I'm not really sure who is going to win. How did you guys feel going into this match?
Oh, super hyped, like you said. And knowing that I know how much that 2 out of 3 falls match was a, like, amazing spectacle, and everybody, like, still refers to it to this day. So I know that they know each other really well, and I know that they're gonna do everything that they can, and I love that it's the opener too. So yeah, I was super excited for this match.
Yeah, to put myself back in my 2014 shoes watching this, I remember there was a lot of buzz around this match and just around both guys, and certainly I was familiar with Cesaro, but I don't know that I'd ever seen Sami Zayn pre-WWE Network, NXT Indies anywhere. And so there's like this really good word of mouth that built up the feud, built up the match, and built him up in my head. So one of the first things I watched on the network, I know, was that 2 out of 3 falls match, which, as Jenny said, you know, had been talked up so very much. And I think it was even showcased, like they hadn't even added like maybe all of the old NXT shows at the time of the network launch. I can't remember exactly, but I know it was like very easy to find. So I watched that and was pretty blown away. And that sort of set the stage for this. I'm pretty sure I watched it like the day of the show live that I was looking forward to. So I was pumped. Like I really kind of built it up for myself, and to see it as the opener here, I was like, you know, we're off to the races now. And I love Sammy having the flags of every country he's competed in on his outfit. That's really cool.
Yeah, that was really cool. And they did point out on commentary, so I give them props for that. So this was a pretty long match. They got like 20-something minutes, which it should have been, because it's, of all the matches, I would say it's easily in the top two of matches built for the show. So in the first part, it was a lot of sort of feeling out in the first few minutes, just sort of feeling out, a lot of working on the mat. And then Cesaro kind of took over and started really working Sammy over with a lot of just brute offense. And they started to play up that Cesaro clearly has the strength advantage for sure. And that played into it. And so Cesaro's just hammering him. And then they go outside and Sammy goes and we get our first callback. And I'm not even sure how many callbacks they did to the 2 out of 3 falls match, because it's not super fresh in my mind, but I definitely know this one. And they called it on commentary. He, Sammy goes for the move where he kind of dives between the ring post and I guess like the turnbuckles, which
I don't know how he does that.
That is amazing. Like,
and
wow.
So in the first match, he nails it. And so obviously the storytelling is Cesaro is wiser, and he just catches him with a sick uppercut.
Oh my God.
His head just bounces. It was incredible. God. It was such a killer spot.
Gorgeous. Yes.
It's like, as cool as that diving tornado DDT is of Sammy's, to see it countered with that European uppercut, which we know Cesaro is so fond of and looks so awesome doing. I'm like, yeah, it's not a bad trade off.
And like, he just, and Sammy sells it so well, because he just, his head bounces and he just drops. It's incredible. And so I thought that first segment, they really did, like, I kind of thought this match kind of broke into three parts. And to me, this was kind of like the first act. And it did a really good job of getting the crowd into it. And they slowly built the heat. And then they hit that spot. And I felt like that's when they really started going to the next gear. And so after that, Cesaro starts working the knee, because that was the story, or at least part of the story going into the match, was that Sammy had this injured knee, but he still wanted to face Cesaro anyway. So Cesaro just savagely starts attacking the knee, and his offense was super awesome on the knee. Like, it wasn't just like lame stuff. He had a lot of variety. He was relentless. He like locked him in a half crab. And I also liked how Sammy the entire time is like wiggling and trying to escape everything he does. He's just not sitting around letting Cesaro hit all the offense, which I thought was really awesome. Sammy keeps trying to take all these risks, but they continue to backfire. He gets caught, gets hit with a backbreaker. So everything he's trying is not working, and Cesaro just keeps wearing him down until finally he hits an exploder suplex into the corner in desperation. And then hits a blue thunderbomb for a nice near fall. And
which looks tremendous.
It does.
Yeah. It was killer. Everything in this match is so smooth. Like, these guys, they're so tight, man. And so he hits the Koji clutch, but Cesaro, which is kind of part of the story of the match too, is everything Sammy's doing, he just doesn't have the power. Cesaro is just has such brute strength that he can power out everything. And then Cesaro put on this really killer, I'm not like an expert at calling moves, but it was basically like some kind of stretch. Like, you're stretching
his neck. Oh, Jesus. Around his neck?
Yeah.
The stretch muffler.
Shit was fucking insane.
Yeah.
I'd never seen that before. Like, I was like, what is he doing?
That's one of those Hoss submissions you don't see too much, but when a great power guy puts it on, especially like a smaller dude who's pretty flexible, like Sammy, who could actually, you know, take it. So great.
And the crawl to the bottom rope was like more believable than some of them are. Like he was really like gutting to get to the rope, and I felt like Cesaro was really fighting him to get him away from it. So amazing spot.
Yeah, and the commentary was great too, because like Regal, like we said, is always great. He can play it like serious or silly depending on the situation. And right here, he really met the moment with a seriousness, because as you get into this later part of the match, you really like, especially Regal starts building, like, is this worth it to Sammy? Like, mm-hmm. that Cesaro's going to basically, you know, tear his knee. Regal screams like he's going to treat every ligament. Like, is it worth tearing every ligament? Is this worth his career? And so Cesaro goes for the swing. Sammy counters it. But then Cesaro eventually does get the swing. And then he goes up top. And Sammy counters. So Cesaro counters him, but then Sammy counters back with a big Rana. He hits the Helluva kick, and that is not enough. I thought it could have been done at that spot. That was a really great, awesome near fall.
Yeah.
And then after that, they kind of sell it that Sammy is kind of done. Like, he doesn't have anything left in the tank. And they do. And so, Tim, I wanted to get your thoughts on this, because I know this is not your favorite thing in the world. Then Cesaro kind of does the stay down thing for a second, where he starts telling him, stay down. So what's your thoughts on that?
I wasn't that bothered by it in this match, because, I mean, they don't belabor the point too much. It's more of a Cesaro was sort of gathering himself, trying to decide what he's going to do next, than it was a, oh my God, I just can't beat this guy. What can I do? Mm-hmm. Stay down. Mm-hmm. Why are you taking so much fun? Like, he wasn't questioning the gods or looking at his hands or doing any of that nonsense.
Right. He wasn't dramatic about it.
He's just sort of super deciding. Because he's, and they've built that up throughout the match too, is he's very calculating. Like, he's so powerful and he just has an answer for everything that, that Sammy throws at him. But Sammy's story of the match is just how tenacious he is. Like, although he keeps getting cut off and countered at every pass, he just has that much fight in him. So it's sort of frustrating Cesaro, but it's not like they're doing this pathos play or whatever kind of nonsense we see.
Right. He keeps his cool. He doesn't freak out about it.
Yeah.
He stays in it with him and just gradually breaks him down.
Yeah, because he, like, says stay down, and when he's like, all right, you're not going to stay down, he starts laying him out with the uppercuts.
Right, exactly.
Like, immediately. Like Tim said, it didn't hurt him much for me, because, like Tim said, they didn't drag it on too much. It was kind of like, look, I'm giving you a chance to stay down. All right, you're not going to stay down. I'm going to keep whipping your ass. Like,
Pretty much.
You know, and also, as you said, Jake, how it's the match sort of breaks down into three different acts. Well, this is where it's moving into that third act. Mm-hmm. We had sort of a very submission limb focused second act with Cesaro, you know, working the knee. And as you said, doing that half crab and all these really disgusting angles, the stretch muffler. And now he's like, all right, let's try some strike based offense, since, that didn't seem to be getting anywhere, because this guy is just too stubborn to submit. And, you know, he's still got some fight in him, so I'll just pound on him for a while. So we get those, again, bringing out those European uppercuts, which, holy crap, they look stiff.
They do.
And so in the last moments, in his final desperation, Sammy, it's a German. But Cesaro comes back, goes for a neutralizer, which Sammy counters for another awesome near fall. Because at this point, you're basically thinking it's got to end one of two ways. Either Sammy is going to grit him out and actually pull it out and overcome, or Cesaro is just going to finally wipe him out. And Cesaro wipes him out, because it's a near fall. And then finally, Sammy kicks out again after Cesaro does like the midair uppercut that he always does. And then he finally gives him one more uppercut, and then finishes him with the neutralizer. And so Cesaro wins it, despite Sami Zayn's tenacious effort. I thought this was an amazing match. I went 4 3/4 on it. I thought it was great. I thought they both played their roles well. It built on the feud that they have. Like, Cesaro is this machine and Sammy is gritty, never say die. I thought they varied the offense. It was like they had really awesome spots, but it didn't feel like they were just trading spots. It all kind of built and made sense. Like, it wasn't paint by numbers that I feel like.
Right.
Like, I feel a lot of modern wrestling, I find, is like, almost everybody's a good wrestler. You don't have as that many just slugs anymore, but a lot of it sometimes can feel paint by numbers, and this did not feel like that at all. I thought it was awesome. I'm going to let y'all talk now. Sorry.
I agree. The only problem that I had with it was, so Sammy does that really cool, I don't know what it's called, but like flippy thing where he like...
Code Red.
Yeah, I guess.
The power bomb looking.
Yeah, yeah.
Sunset flip.
Fucking
bomb.
Cool. Like, there's too many flips that happened in that space that should not have happened.
Yeah.
And, like, I thought that should have been the end. They did a really, really good sequence of near falls that the crowd and me, we all bit on. But I feel like Sammy should have won this match. And he should have won right then. Like, I felt like the finishing was anticlimactic. And although, I mean, I don't hate it at all. Like, it's great, but I just feel like after everything that Sammy kicked out of, like, this is what he's finally gonna like lose to. I don't know. It didn't look impressive enough to finish it with the flourish that it deserves, because this match is amazing.
Yeah.
I went 4 1/4 stars. Tim?
I'm kind of with you there, Jenny, in that on the one hand, I really wanted Sammy to win. And that's...
Me too.
I mean, that's just talking as a wrestling fan. Like, he won me over so, so much, and I just was pulling for him so hard. I'm like, story and booking be damned. I just want the guy to win. Because he's been so impressive and so likable. And on the other hand, you're like, well, that's not really his character. Like, he's the underdog. Therefore, he loses more times than not, basically, right? But, I mean, they did the 2 out of 3 falls match, which Sammy also lost. So it's kind of like, I don't know, it's not the worst thing in the world for him to win 2 major outings against Cesaro. Like, he can come back from that just because he did make such a great showing. But it just seems like if he was going to lose here in this match, then there should have been a rematch, right? At some point along the way on a, and this is spoilers a little bit because there's not.
I was gonna ask, this is really you guys, it for them. What, like, is this the thing? Like, I think that was the other disappointing part for me, is that I felt like I didn't know if there was another match, but I felt like if there's been 2 and Cesaro won them both and they're both very epic, then probably not there's a 3. Right. But they have a 3 in them, and easily. I felt like Sammy should have definitely won this to even it up, and then had a
rubber match.
Just fucking 5-star, you know, the next outings.
Yeah, and I mean, I get it. I mean, Cesaro won both of them, so there's no story reason in them having another match. I just, even if it's just something you throw out there, like exhibition style on a NXT weekly show and have Sammy get the big win there, it's not even so much about him winning the series, but just give him, like, a blow off win, you know what I mean? And it's not totally unprecedented. Like, he, in his NXT debut, he beat Cesaro in like a fluke roll up, and so that's been kind of their story, is that Sammy can win on a fluke, but maybe can't win it in a real big match situation. And this didn't exactly put the lie to that, right? So, yeah, I'm a little bit like, I don't know. It's just Cesaro. Give Sammy the damn win. Like, I know everybody loves Cesaro, but come on, you're trying to show
peace. Yeah.
I get it.
I think it's kind of like what you were saying earlier, Tim. It's part of, I think, the transitional phase here, because it's like Cesaro is a main roster guy. And when they're still in this mode of bringing main roster guys in, they're kind of thinking of like, we want Cesaro to come out of this ultimately stronger because he's already on the main roster.
Right.
And I think I was okay with it for the most part, because I think it accomplished what it needed to for Sammy, which is to really, like, because he's an underdog, like, establish his resiliency and they'll never say die. Because when you look at them, he does seem overmatched a little bit going against Cesaro. And I think, and this might just be my bias, my pro NXT bias, is that I don't remember. I mean, it could totally not play out like this at all. I don't remember the details, but I guess I have some faith, or giving them the benefit of the doubt, of like long-term storytelling with Sammy, where it's like, maybe, you know, he loses here, but maybe this is going to pay off somewhere down the road that we can get the underdog finally overcoming. But again, I'm not saying I wouldn't have been thrilled if he would have won, because it would have been awesome, but I kind of see why they did it. And I think it's just something we're going to have to, for better or worse, to deal with at this point, because that's still how they view NXT. And some would argue they still look at it like that today, but especially here, when you have main roster people coming, you know, making a quick visit, ultimately that's probably who they're going to put over in the end. And if, in their eyes, I guess, at this time, if you can, you know, have a guy like Cesaro put on these classic matches, he looks great. And then Sammy looks great because he's getting himself over as a face, I guess. But I definitely understand it could be frustrating, him not winning.
Well, I have a couple things. I'm sorry. But like this, like we said, this is the first live event of the network. So I feel like their NXT guys should have the more wins. Does that make sense? Or not? I mean, you know, it seems like you didn't choose to use WrestleMania, you know, as the first live event here. This is a test, but still, NXT is young. Why not have your NXT guys look good, even against main roster guys? It doesn't make the main roster guys look worse. I mean, I guess maybe it might, but anyway. And then my other point was, is this the beginning of overindulgent NXT matches?
Well, if this match happened today, it would be rated 2.5 stars overindulgent. No, I'm being snarky.
I just mean with the kickouts and whatnot, you know.
No, I think that comes into play more with the, like, having a lot of finisher kickouts. I think is sort of the shorthand definition of that.
Yeah, because it took a lot, but Cesaro, correct me if I'm wrong, but that was the only neutralizer he hit, was the one at the end to win it, right? Because all the other ones, Sammy countered.
I mean, he did kick out of Sammy's finish, but you could sort of consider that a callback to their earlier match where Sammy won the first fall of the 2 out of 3 with that Huluva. That is such a dumb name, the Huluva kick. Like within the first few seconds, I think, of the match, he got that first fall victory with that. So it sort of plays into that. You're thinking, oh, if he's beaten Cesaro with it before, and Cesaro kicks out. So it just sort of adds to the drama, which when people say overindulgent, I look at it as, more often than not, it's just me being more invested in the drama than they are. But whatever.
Me too.
Yes, I will say, I will sort of agree on a related note, Jenny, that the finish felt a little bit anticlimactic, because right before that neutralizer, Cesaro catches him with that, you know, European uppercut. I don't know what to call it. And Sammy kicks out on like a one count. And you're like, oh shit, he's got this fire back in him now. He's going to make this huge comeback. And Cesaro just cuts it off, crushes him, pins him. And you're like, I don't know, that felt a little pointless. Yeah. Like, I get that it sort of defies your expectations. it's less predictable the way they did it, but it's still sort of like, I was ready for them to kick it into even another gear, you know?
Right, yeah.
But that's to take nothing away from the match, really. I gave it 4.5 stars, so I'm not far off from
nice.
Either of you. I go back and forth on whether I like this better than the 2 out of 3. I think I gave the slight edge to the 2 out of 3 falls match. I know I had one of these on my GWWE, and I think it was that earlier one.
I think I remember you saying that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, by just I couldn't even tell you what my rationale was at the time or is today. But I watched them back to back, when I was doing that a few months ago, and for whatever reason, gave that one the slight edge. So, but anyway, yeah, it's fine. You also wonder, they had some plans for Cesaro too here. Not in NXT, but just on Raw, I guess. So you figure that had to be a factor too. Maybe you don't have him job here considering what they're going to be doing pretty shortly. I mean, it doesn't pan out because nothing ever does on the main roster, but that is still in the back of my mind too. So in any case, great, great match. Far and away the best match we've seen since starting this project.
Oh, fucking no doubt.
Yeah. And to kind of go on the glass half full side of what Jenny was saying earlier, like, could this be the first overindulgent kind of match for NXT? I think it kind of sets the tone for, like, okay, NXT can have some killer matches. Like, mm-hmm. I think especially on their first kind of big event to come out the gate with this, like a 25-minute classic like this, I think it kind of sets the tone. And I could not think of a better way for them to open this first event than with this match. Right. And I think it was extremely smart to put it out there first to kind of set the tone. Because we're going to see not everything on this card is up to snuff with this or anywhere close to it. So I think it was really good for them to go out and set the tone. And whether it's not everybody's thing, but I think it is a lot of people's thing. And is definitely a little bit different than what you were seeing on main roster WWE for the most part.
I think that we've dissected it enough, but I will mention, and I don't know what you guys think about this, but I like this announced team, but I feel like, and this is very odd for me to say because I'm very much all about the commentary, especially when Regal is involved, but I felt like it was over-commentated a bit. Like,
okay.
Like, it was, like, let them tell some of the story in the ring. Like, you don't have to tell everything. And maybe it was nerves or something, maybe because they knew it was a huge deal. And the network was, you know, brand new. And I don't know. I just felt like I was being mansplained a lot of the match.
It was kind of more in your face in the way that a main roster pay-per-view commentary might be, as opposed to like watching some of the TV stuff where they go off on these weird tangents. I mean, I get why, much as we do on this show.
what?
I get why they don't do that here on this Arrival major event, but at the same time, you don't want it to sound like your run-of-the-mill commentary from, you know, Elimination Chamber. and I think it was better than that, but I totally get it where you're coming from with the... It's not quite the same, and it's a little bit broader. It's a little bit more hammering you over the head.
A little bit, yeah. And
yeah, and it's hard to really break down what exactly is there or not there that should be, but... Yeah,
it kind of persists throughout the whole night. I mean, I'll mention it again, but I mean, it gets some better towards the end, but maybe it's just a combination of a bunch of factors. I don't ding it too bad for that, but
sure.
I definitely noticed it.
Gotcha.
Yeah, we'll see how it develops. I guess I'm on. I enjoyed it. I do get what you're saying for sure, and I think part of it is that just like the wrestlers, these announcers are kind of developmental too. Like Saxton and Tom Phillips are kind of like, so they probably felt this pressure to like, you know, we got to get the match over.
Right. I definitely they tried think a little Regal, hard.
Yeah, and Regal, I think Regal knows how to pick his spots.
Right.
And when to kind of put over what's going on in the match and kind of just kind of keep it more general at other times. And not, but I know what you mean about Saxton. Saxton, I find, would do it a lot where he's kind of like hammering like almost a thesis of the match over. He wants the respect. Okay, yeah, we get it. Yeah. You know,
they have such a history. He's working on the knee.
This like, is what it's all about.
Understand. Like, I get it.
Yeah. I guess I'm more like the Regal stuff is. Like throughout this show, I think I like the commentary, but a lot of it is Regal because I think
he knows
how to when to get really in the nitty gritty of the wrestling, when to put over the bigger angle, but not overdo it. And I think it's like you had mentioned, I think it's just these guys trying to, you know, it's a big show. It's probably their biggest show ever on commentary and they're trying to get it in. And I guess they're probably thinking, you know, if anything, I want to say too much then. You know, sit here and sound like I don't know what I'm talking about. But I definitely get what you mean. Saxton, for sure, I would say.
Yeah, probably.
Phillips did have a nice moment where he was, at the beginning of the match, putting over the international background of both competitors. And that's where they talked about the flags from different countries on Sammy's tights. Yeah. And I don't know, that lended something to the presentation, I thought, where, again, if you hadn't seen these two athletes before, you're like, oh wow, they're like world traveled and so cultured and so skilled and refined, and this is going to be a great match. And sure enough, it was a hell of a match. So that was something I really appreciated. And you know, Regal also, as you said, all the little flourishes with him putting over the little things that Cesaro does. Like he says something about where he's putting Sammy back in the ring. He makes sure to do it on the, this is before the cliche hardest part of the ring stuff comes up in every match. All he's doing is throwing the guy back in the ring, but it's like, he made sure to really do it on the hardest surface.
Yeah. I think he said that quite a few times during this show.
Mm-hmm.
The hardest part of the ring for sure.
Of course, we don't see a lot of, the apron spots that, you know, are so signature now. It's just one of, that's another thing that we might have to track the evolution of. It's because I don't associate that with being like an NXT trope, but I mean, they certainly do it in NXT as well today. So that's something to keep our eye on. Do they start, when do they really start ramping up the, here's a really convoluted looking move on the apron.
I don't know. I guess we'll see. All right. So moving on, we spent a lot of time on the match, but to be fair, it does take up about a quarter of the show. So
deservedly. So.
Yeah.
Best match.
Yeah.
One of
okay.
The best
so
matches. Shit.
Yeah. So our next thing we have is a Mojo Rawley video package. Basically introducing, and this is something we'll see throughout the show, and I think a big part of it is that they're expecting this, and I mean they're right in thinking this, that this is going to be a lot of fans' first exposure in NXT. So they're not going to be familiar with all these guys, especially the mid-card guys like Mojo Rawley. So there's a lot of these packages throughout to kind of just give you a quick introduction to the character. So this one is all about Mojo Rawley and how hype he is. He even has, I put that he waxes philosophical about the nature of being hype because he says, at one point, what if one stays hype at all times? You definitely get across that he is, he's all about the hype because he said, what he said something like, you can get hype, but what if you're always hype?
Such a scholar. He's
trying to fuck up your mind, man.
Yeah, Mojo. What'd you guys think of them?
Some of that psychology.
Yeah. Shit. Maybe I've been selling him short. God.
You have been. Well, I mean, his opponent is CJ Parker, who is.
Hang on. Don't you mean a male jobber known as CJ Parker?
Yes, that's who I mean.
Y'all will find this funny. I mean, I'd even do it as a joke, but in my notes, I put CJ Tucker. I legitimately forgot his name.
I just always write CJP as my shorthand.
Like,
in my. Is C.J. Parker African American or is he white? It doesn't really matter. I'm just curious because I can't tell.
I am uncomfortable speculating.
Me too. I don't know. It just was a question.
Look, he's this fucking dickhead who cares about the environment. I mean, God, what a loser. You know?
Who fucking cares about that?
What a heel, asshole.
Jeez. Ford Fiesta driving.
Ford Fiesta
how
driving.
How does Mojo stay so hyped, though? Mm-hmm. Is it cocaine? Is that the reason?
I think it's meth.
It might be meth. I think like that might be harder to hide in the
all WWE. Natural, baby.
Think so?
Maybe.
Organic,
like a Grunenberg situation.
Yes. I mean, yes, very much.
Yeah. We obviously have a lot to say about this match.
Yes,
we do a lot.
So, as Jenny mentioned, we have Mojo Rawley versus C.J. Parker. Rigo says you can't help but like Mojo. Tim, how you feel about that?
Well, you know, I like I said, I think I was selling the guy short with his scholarly opining on the nature of being hyped. I mean, Mojo Rawley, existentialist, who knew?
Exactly.
Well, I am the Gronk to your Mojo Rawley, so.
There.
What do you mean?
Ooh, I don't know if Tim likes that. He might want to.
Well,
Tim might want to be Gronk.
Future 24/7 champion, right?
So this was a very paint by numbers, like a pretty much a cool down match after the epic we just saw. Some basic back and forth, and then Mojo wins with the hyperdrive, which is basically like the butt splash thing, popularized by Earthquake, at least in my mind. My issue with that is that I feel like that should not be his finish. Because no. I feel like he's kind of that's like a fat guy finisher.
And
he's
you got to be a big fat guy to do that.
Yeah, he doesn't have enough butt to be doing the Earthquake butt splash as his finisher.
Like a spear or something.
Yeah, you know?
Yeah, that's a power move.
Yeah,
so it's kind of a weird finisher because I just don't feel like his ass has the power to be.
Definitely
you
not.
Know? I need like a Yokozuna Earthquake. You know, I feel like he's kind of taken. That's reserved for fat guys, you know?
Yeah, somebody real pear shaped with like really short legs.
Dainty feet. Yes. Yeah.
Dainty feet. The pitcher passer of dainty
feet. Yeah.
Like Yokozuna.
There we go.
Yep.
But yeah, I went one star on this. This was nothing. This was not any different than what you would see on NXT TV. I did have one note about at one point CJ screeches at him, telling him, "I thought you were hype." Like,
yes.
Yeah, which was.
Also, at one point, Regal says JCP is credible. I'm like, oh, bless your heart. You try so hard.
You sure know, honey.
Why are you even saying this, William Regal? You're better than this.
They said the word backstage is that CJ rubs people the wrong way. So I don't know if I should take that literally or.
Probably so.
Literally rubbing people.
He definitely smells, though, right?
Yeah.
Oh, he's in the smell club for sure.
He's in the smell club. I thought so.
Absolutely. All right.
I liked Regal getting the dig on his hair dye, I think it was, at one point.
Yes.
He uses only natural products, and he's like, well, what's natural about his hair color? So for that, I gave it a star and a quarter. I think I tacked on the quarter for some of the funny commentary and the
me too.
The banter within the ring.
Agreed.
Yeah. So, Jen, did you give your rating for this one?
It was a star and a quarter.
Star, yeah.
Okay.
Regal says afterwards that this was a star-making performance for Mojo, which
that's right.
I don't know one if Regal star. Believes that.
Yeah. Hey, one star.
One star making.
Nice.
One star and a quarter making.
More like a star. Yeah, that's a good one. I like it.
Mojo does do a cute thing where he finds a guy, in the, a little scrawny ass looking guy in the crowd.
I remember that.
He's wearing his hype t-shirt and he's like, yeah, brother. And like, I'm like, oh, that's cute. But
yeah, that guy, I don't know if he was that hype.
He did not look hype.
No.
More like Nojo Raleigh. I love the Jake's reaction to that. To that just bombing.
No, it was more just, it's like a proud father.
No, I'm legit taken to like saying those jokes in my house. Or like blah blah blah. You know, it's not getting over here, but it's funny to me.
That's what it's all about.
Yep.
All right. Next, we have an Emma package similar to the Mojo Raleigh package. Mm-hmm. This one was odd. She talks about she has so much personality. They ask her if she's better at dancing or wrestling, which I feel like is not a question you want to be asked as a wrestler. It was the tone. And she said, I think she said something like, this is how I get to the dance or something like that. And it's kind of weird because the whole thing was trying to build her character as kind of like bumbling, like kind of like a bumbling fool and kind of awkward. Yeah. It was very strange. And the whole production of it, it reminded me like of a student like project or something. Like it looked like something I would have done in like media class when I was in like 10th grade.
Well might have been here from the Full Sail.
That's what I was thinking. Was this like a Full Sail thing? It was very like, it wasn't like a typical WWE style video package. Yeah. It was real strange. I don't know. What'd you guys think of this Emma package?
My note says, is Emma really practicing her dumb dance backstage? What practice do you need to like thrust your hands from side to side? Like, what?
Yeah.
But also, I caught a glimmer of something that we'll see or that I saw in her match tonight later on, which was a little bit of a cunning. It was like, it was like she's pretending to be this silly person when she's not super the silly person. And then it caught my attention because I've always just pretty much been annoyed by her and dismissed her and hated her dance. But I saw something of her in the promo. It was like, sort of like Amy Schumer in the way that Amy Schumer, I think, is a pretty intelligent person, but does like the silly, goofy comedy and like it's sort of like her way of getting herself over, like in a weird way, you know what I mean?
Like maybe it gets people to let their guard down, and
yeah, like you think she's just kind of dumb, and then
you underestimate.
She has a little bit of something underneath there. Yeah, it was a glimmer that I saw in that package that was surprising to me. I did not expect it, and I feel like it played itself out when her match comes up later.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah.
Which is weird because it's not next.
Right. I know it is weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Like, well, we're going to get one of these for Paige also. So I guess they're just doing hype videos for both of them, which is decent because it makes it feel like we are taking the women's championship pretty seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fine.
Divas Championship.
Yes.
Whatever they call
it. Yeah, so that's something I'm a bit unclear on also. They're still doing the Divas branding, right? Smart, sexy, powerful, I think is how it went. And all well and good. The wrestling here on NXT, I would say already is more treated more credibly than on the main roster in 2014. I'm trying to remember. Like,
it's hit or miss. Like from what we've seen on TV, it's like the gimmicks are still basic, but the wrestling is better.
Yep, the wrestling is sort of there, but the gimmicks are very one-dimensional.
Immature, yes.
Yeah. I think we'll see it when we get to the women's match later, but I found there was a huge contrast to the presentation of the women in the women's match on this show compared to what we've seen in the previous 2 months of NXT TV, So again, but that match is not next. It was kind of weird that they didn't go into it, but I guess like Tim said, they need time to do the Paige one too, which makes sense because we haven't seen Paige in about 3 months. So,
right.
Contribute to that feeling we're just talking about.
So on the last episodes, I was asking as we were building up to arrival, well, what is the Ascension going to do? Because of the tag champs, they really don't have any big feud going. They have to have some kind of match to the tag champs. How are you going to have like your first big event and not have your tag champs wrestle? And so they put on an open challenge, and who else comes out? Mm-hmm. Just like we all would have expected. Mm-hmm. Too Cool comes out. Scotty Tuhati and Grandmaster Sexay come out to face the Ascension.
No.
So that is where we're going with this. What was your reaction when you saw Too Cool?
I believe I sent you a picture of my notes that says, what question mark are question mark we question mark doing question mark? Because I was fucking lost. Because Ascension, like, from what I know about them, they're amazing. They're epic. We haven't seen that. But just kind of,
I think those people are wrong.
I'm kind of doubting where this reputation comes from, because I have yet to see it yet. And I'm wrong. It is so unevenly matched. It is so fucking weird. And I don't get it. And I hope you guys can explain it to me.
More like too old.
Am I right?
In my notes, I put, Grandmaster Sexay, I put that he was looking real lawlerish here.
Yeah.
He kind of really had a little bit of he was a little pudgy. And Scotty, who is, if you are used to seeing him back in the prime of Too Cool, had the like blonde, like spike straight up hair, but now he is just completely bald. And so I put that he looked like he was about to drive to Florida for $3,000 to murder someone.
Yeah.
With that mustache in the bald head.
Yes.
Or also he maybe looked like an impoverished Stone Cold. Like impoverished to the point where he can't afford food and starts deflating.
Okay, so I have to say I love that we're using impoverished in lieu of poor man's so-and-so. Yes. Well, because that would be incredibly politically incorrect to call him a poor man's something or other. Mm-hmm. Never mind the fact that saying impoverished makes it sound so much worse.
It does. I love it.
And I'm for it.
It's so descriptive and visual.
Trying to up the vocab, okay?
I'm really for it. Very academic. We also... We get a very brief, you can't even call it a package, more like a clip, a cutaway to Too Cool that's basically like, hey guys, remember 2000?
Yeah.
No.
I guess you forgot who this is.
No.
And that's the whole thing about this is like, okay, because I think the issue here is that they don't have anybody. Like, there's not a lot of depth at this point to NXT, so there's really no tag team, like men's tag team for them to face, unless
there's
they
no
kind
tag
of just
division.
Yeah, there's no tag division,
the
so they don't.
Wyatt family is it because
their
main roster?
Their main roster, and then so you'd have to have the Wyatts come in and lose because everything has been about the Ascension dominating. So I get what they're doing in a very very broad sense. You want to bring in somebody with name value to like, for them to wrestle and win. But the deal is here, I feel like you want to go one of two ways. You either need a team with name value that they're just going to crush immediately, like squash, or some team, like an older team that could come in and give them an awesome match. Too Cool does not fit either of those descriptions.
No.
You know, like, they're not going to, I mean, Too Cool were never known as these, like, great wrestlers. It was all about the gimmick and having fun. So it is completely mismatched to put them with the Ascension, who are supposed to be like these gritty, like, I don't know, I guess
badass
sort of
motherfuckers.
like road warrior kind of guys.
Yeah.
So what is Too Cool going to give them? Like, they're not going to. And the thing is they don't squash them. They kind of.
That's the thing. Yeah. I mean, go ahead and just squash them. And that would, I mean, kind of put over the Ascension as these pretty mega heels with, you know, old Too Cool. Whoa, we're all about the fun. And they just get killed. And they don't get any of their signature stuff in. Like, just they're murdered within seconds. And that's the match. Like,
but then they don't do that because they got to let Scotty come in and hit the worm. So the crowd could say, the worm, you know.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
so
in ring, it's all right. Like, it's not horrible.
It's not terrible.
It's not, I mean, it's watchable, but it still makes no sense to me because I know that I don't know shit, and I know these guys are washed up, and
they did not look great.
No, I mean, they did okay for what they are, but, like, still, I've seen the Ascension come in there and, you know, just dominate. Like, I don't know. It makes no sense.
And I think they had to, like, at one point, they had to do a really long rest hold because
that was
Grandmaster Sexay, he looked pretty blown up. He was sucking wind. He looked like me trying to jump on the trampoline with my son.
Yeah.
Like, he was
I don't
done.
Do tricks. I just jump.
Yeah, exactly.
And also, William Regal saying Sexay the whole match.
Yes.
I mean, it was kind of the highlight.
Called himself
of
out for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that in a vacuum, like, the ring work isn't the worst thing you've ever seen, but for what this probably should have been, it was pretty bad. And it was pretty bad, I think, primarily because of that, you know, Victor working the headlock for 72 hours and then transitioning into a chin lock. It's like, why are they? And again, I had the same criticism in the last Ascension match that we watched, which was against two local talents on the on the last TV show. They sort of were beating around the bush and didn't look all that impressive. Yeah, they got the win, but just it was like the Road Warriors, they are not. I mean, not even in the ballpark. Mm-mm. And I agree. I mean, I recognize and appreciate the value in using a team with some actual name value, but you want the Ascension to look like world beaters. And
yeah, they're selling
doing this pretty competitive match against a team that peaked 14 years ago. What are we doing?
Not doing it for me. What'd y'all do on star ratings for this one?
I want a star and a half because, like we said, in the vacuum, the match itself is not terrible. It's more just the, like, why. It's more like the
weirdness.
Booking.
Yeah.
I went
2 on it. I don't know. Feels high now. I'm thinking.
Yeah.
You know, I actually went a star and 3/4, and I'm leaning more star and a half as we talk through it.
Me too, also.
Because I'm like, I don't think it was quite 2 stars, which I would consider fair, you know?
Yeah.
I think it was more poor than fair, so that's why I was like, it's just not quite. But I'm like, it was more bad.
I agree.
Yeah, it was a weird. The whole thing was strange. The Ascension are selling for doughy Too Cool.
I don't get it.
I'm knocking it down to a star and a half.
Me right. too.
Well, 1/4 star. I Fair just enough. Took off. Can you believe that? I'm out of control.
The
real time star ratings right here.
Yeah.
Yep.
Call it in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Next up, after that, very strange. So, not the greatest stretch in the show after the classic match to begin, because we're in a bit of a lull now. But we have the Page package next, which basically introduces us, at least for our purposes, to the Paige character, because we've heard about her, but everything that we have seen with the Divas/Women at this point is all about the BFFs in the, I can't remember the name of the other group, the BFFs and
Trash yeah. Horse.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Whoa.
Pretty sure.
I don't know that they have a name. It's just a loose affiliation of the face.
Trash Horse.
The next.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And so Paige, her whole package is presenting her as kind of like the anti-diva. She doesn't have blonde hair. She has, as William Regal says, raven head. And so they're definitely trying to push the contrast to Emma because Paige is a lot grittier. She talks a lot more tough. And to me, she comes off a lot more in this promo, a lot more what I associate with NXT with all of my knowledge to date. Maybe not this time period, but seems a lot more NXT to me, the way she's presenting herself and not kind of like WWE diva. And I think when we look back, I think the anti-diva stuff here can seem a little heavy-handed, but I think at the time, it would probably seem a lot more refreshing than, you know?
Yeah.
Yes.
But I thought it was a pretty effective package. It made me pretty hype, and especially since we haven't seen her.
Paige, I love this, like, trash emo Paige deal. Like, that's all of that works for me. So she's
has a real confidence about her too, just in the way
attitude.
She talks attitude without coming across as I don't know, defensive, which a lot of times when they're, you can be trying too hard, like a lot of the commentary on the show is. And you don't get that sense. She feels very authentic and very confident. And it's a shame we haven't seen her. I wonder if maybe there's a visa situation, right? Where apparently perhaps. That's what's going on with Rhea Ripley, who's going to be away for a little while.
So. Not to judge her physically, but they did this real, like, heavy eyeliner makeup, like lashes thing with her face, and it's very dark and goth, and then she's very, very pale, and she has very dark hair. So all of that just, like, really works for her. Like, completely sets her apart from the Emmas of the world.
Right. So this is our big NXT Divas Championship match with Paige and Emma that we have been told about for weeks. But before the match, we have Stephanie arrives to put over the NXT Divas division, says it's all about being empowered and that this is the next generation of divas. And in this very weird moment, so Stephanie cuts this whole promo about how the divas are, they can do whatever the men can do. They're just as good. They're empowered. I really thought it would have worked a lot better. I don't know the championship situation. I guess is the champion supposed to come out second, but I wish they would have had Paige come out because it was this really awkward moment where she says the next generation of divas, and then Emma comes out with that weird music and like dancing around.
Yeah.
It was a very strange juxtaposition because Stephanie's like this rah-rah divas promo, and then Emma comes out with this really like
goofy, you
know? With the bubbles, everything. It was a weird visual to go with Stephanie's promo. What did y'all think?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that, but Stephanie is flawless and is amazing, and I popped super hard for her showing up and the crowd chanting "You still got it," and she said "I never lost it," and I said "No, you did not, baby, because you look real good." And I love Stephanie. That's all I took away from that.
Yeah, gotta love big stuff here.
Oh,
I mean,
Mama stuff.
So perfect.
I think you do make a good point, though, about you get this very silly appearance from Emma first. Okay, she's the challenger, I get it. But then Paige comes out and she's like, she's got kind of the badass music and she's this very serious competitor and she's got the look, and you're like, that's exactly what Stephanie was talking about.
Yeah.
It's just,
it was, yeah. Yeah, it was
weird. She was just like, this is the next generation. Like, it was just a weird music cue. Yeah, it was a weird cue. But, okay, so this match, I guess Paige is kind of working heel here. I guess she's kind of the heel. She's the champion. So my thing with this match is I felt in the first part of it, I felt that it was kind of back and forth, and I feel like they couldn't get much of anything going. Like, it wasn't bad. It was very grounded. A lot of it was, there's not a lot of running the ropes or anything. But I felt like whenever Emma, when she locked in that hold and started working Paige's back, I feel like everything from that moment on was really, really good. I really feel like that's when the match kind of got into a groove. In the first part, they were kind of meandering a little bit. But after that, I thought it got really good. I love that Paige went for the finisher and it didn't work. But instead of it being like, well, let me do my finisher again, she pulls out this like crazy, Regal called it a, what was it? Scorpion crosslock.
Scorpion crosslock.
But, like, he's like, that's the scorpion crosslock. But, and it looked freaking sick. It was amazing.
It was amazing. Yes.
And so I just loved that it was like, she's not just like, well, let me do my finisher again. She pulls out this wild submission and wins the match with it. And I really thought, I really liked the grit of the match. Like, I did think it suffered a little bit from, like, what I would call, like, lack of movement. Like, they weren't really, like I said, I think they could have done a little bit more, like, moving around the ring and running the ropes a little bit. Because I feel like at times it felt a little clumsy. But, man, once Emma locked in that back hold, I thought it really got going. And I thought it was really good, actually. I gave it 3.25. Just because I like the whole vibe of it. And like we had said, it was completely different than what we've seen from them going into this. It was real serious, real gritty. Like, they were both scratching and clawing to win. It wasn't a bunch of, like, well, girls are here to just, you know, like we always get Renee saying that the girls are here. The girls are always a bunch of drama. It felt like extremely competitive. Yeah, I mean, that's it.
Yeah.
No Renee on commentary. That's,
I was going to say, where's Renee? That was my first note. They didn't trot her out
done with that.
As the token female on the commentator. But for serious, I low-key love this match. I was not expecting this in any way. But because we haven't seen Paige, and what I've seen of Emma has not been great. So I was like, eh, whatever, there's going to be blah, blah. But like you said, after the first kind of initial warm-up where they did a little bit of the hair pulling and the slapping stuff, and then once they started doing the submission stuff and, you know, they didn't do any, like, real, like, flippy stuff. Nobody, like, really went off the ropes that much, and they just really kept it grounded. Lots of emotion from Paige, too. Emma... And this is where I started to, like, some of that stuff that I saw in the promo started coming out, because she was very tenacious. And although I hate it when they would, like, call her moves, like, by their names, I don't know why, that just, like, totally annoyed
me. The Emma sandwich.
Like, I don't give a fuck. Like, please don't do that. I felt like it cheapened it because she was doing really well. She really was. And I feel like every time they named her moves, it made it stupid. So I wish
that's a really good point. That, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but
no, interrupt.
I think that's something that doesn't get talked about enough. Like, when you have, like, a really good worker who has a really impressive move set, but they have extremely stupid or juvenile names, like. Bailey to belly always sounds dumb coming out here. You know, like, even, and I get it's a little bit more fitting for that character, but it does sort of hurt your willingness to take this more seriously, especially when this is a very, I mean, when you get down to it, a pretty technical match.
It is.
Between two very skilled competitors.
It was highly impressive.
Yeah, you find yourself kind of having to make excuses for why Emma has such a dumb gimmick. And
exactly.
And I see it more to your point earlier, how there's maybe a cunning angle to it, where this is very much like a put-on for her. Like, I don't think that's what they were going for. I think maybe she was trying to get it over little bit, in a subtle way. Regardless, that's going to be my headcanon now because it works so much better than trying to explain away why Emma is like this and yet matches that she does. And it's just, and I'm not saying that somebody who has kind of their personality is a little bit, seems less serious, only has to be relegated to comedy matches. Like, that's not really what I'm saying, but at the end of the day, it's still professional wrestling. So you have a character and you have their ring work and you don't want there to be such a disconnect between the two.
Well, she comes out to bubbles. You know what I'm saying? Like, but I mean, also maybe that's also kind of clever too. Like, you know, like maybe I'm reading into this, like what I want it to be. I'm fantasy booking, like what I want it to be, like I do with Shane Douglas in the ECW in 1994. But, I gave it 3 and 3.5 stars. Like, I super really liked it a whole lot.
I wasn't expecting it to be this good going into it. And it's like you said, we need more of that Emma that you see in the second half of this match, both in the ring and in her character. It needs to be made more because they damn sure make sure we know that she's into bubbles and dancing. You know, they need to make that more of her character. It kind of makes me feel like they kind of are dropping the ball a little bit on how she's presented.
I agree.
Yeah. I went 3.5 stars too. And
really? Oh, I thought I was going to be high on this.
No. I think that's pretty fair. I think what actually sort of bumped it for me a little bit was going back to a point that Jake made. Paige hits her move, I guess, which is called the Paige Turner. Doesn't actually look all that impressive, right? I mean, it's fine, but it feels like more of a transition move. And they're like, oh my God, that's her finish. And Emma kicked out. And it's sort of a really cool shorthand, a way to sort of communicate that we're stepping up our game here in NXT, like the kind of stuff that might have flown like on television a year ago, this developmental crap isn't really going to work here. And so that she comes up short, but goes right back to something a lot more impressive looking in that Scorpion cross lock, which truly did look dead.
Oh, it was wicked.
It's like, oh, okay, that's more like it, you know?
Yeah.
And I can't imagine she can put that move on just anybody, but man, it looked awesome here. Nice callback to Bull Nakano. Bull Nakano. As Randy Savage would say, using that submission.
And the bummer about this is that I think we may see her on TV, NXT TV, like one more time or so, but there's not really much left to Paige in NXT. She has such a strange career.
She really like does.
Especially after watching this match, because I think you can forget how talented she was, and she's super young. She's like 21 here.
But she gets injured. Is that right?
Yeah, she gets. She goes. She wins the title after WrestleMania. Like in a, it's like one of those night after WrestleMania. Like, oh my God, Paige is here, and she wins the title, and then she has to vacate. Yep. We'll see all this play out. But it's like, I really wish she would have stayed in NXT like a little bit longer. When NXT really starts cooking, because I really think she could have done some awesome stuff when the women's division really starts heating up in the next few years. It's kind of like a huge what if, but
God, unfortunately, imagine her working with 2014, 2015 Sasha, you know?
Shit.
It's a bummer. But yeah, because after watching this one, I was like, man, I really would like to see some more Paige in NXT. Because I think this, like, Paige, it's like all the outside stuff kind of, unfortunately, at this point, kind of puts her as a wrestler. It's kind of like a side story for her. Unfortunately, at this point, everything's, Yeah. But.
Well, and what's really fucked up is she gets, as you said, called up very fast, and she was one of the very few main roster success stories, if you can call it that. Like, she was not booked incredibly well, but they never, like, buried her, you know? And then all the extracurricular stuff, as you alluded to, happened. And
look at you guys very... not saying sex tape at all.
Yeah.
So classy.
Yeah, look at us. We're very classy individuals, you know?
You are.
This is a classy podcast.
But even that, and all the Alberto Del Rio stuff, and
Yeah. But I mean, as a wrestler, as a worker, they never, they didn't do her like they did most of their NXT call-ups and just treat them like crap and then make them an afterthought. You know, she does have some injuries. Yes, she does have all the other outside the ring stuff. And then that's kind of her career.
But like you said, like her and Sasha, like the idea of that, like NXT, gives me the collie wobbles.
Well, her and Charlotte giving the collie wobbles, but that's okay.
All the above. Speaking of things that give us the collie wobbles, we should run down some.
We are going to see a Charlotte match, aren't we, though? We do get Paige and Charlotte, I think.
Do we?
I don't know. See, I'm I guess it's good that I'm forgetting, because that way it's not so much spoilers as
I'll be surprised then.
Really faulty memory. I feel like I don't know. Anyway.
You ruined Jake's segue, by the way.
I sure did. Well, he has the collie wobbles. He needs time to recover.
Yeah. What also gives me the collie wobbles is all the amazing content we have here at Place to Be Nation.
See, we do right here on the you did good, yes.
Thank you,
on the wrestling feed, on the Place to Be podcast number 546. Jesus Christ, that's a lot. JT and Scott welcome first time guest Sean Kidd to review and discuss the 9/21/90 MSG house show. Good job there for your first time mothership appearance, Sean. The Chain Reaction number 6 brings you WrestleMania 36 takes from Nate Milton, Scott Criscolo, Britt Chittington. Oh, God, I always say his name wrong. Chittington and Chris Ely. And
Nicky, I think
it's Yes, that's also his name. So they did Chain Reaction number 6 and they did it without me, which is fine because I decided not to do it. But, speaking of reaction shows, there's a two-parter that Chris Zellner and Devin Hales did. You can check that out on the wrestling feed right now. Also, Scott and Dr. G return with the NWA Saturday Night Special, where they revisit the 70th anniversary show. Row 1, Seat 1, its newest episode features guests Damon Windsor and Zachary Cooper. These special relations are back with episode number 6 featuring me. And we talk about our underrated WrestleManias. They do a segment called Happy Place, which is really fun. And then we did a live watch of my favorite match of all time, which nobody will ever guess what that is. But it was
it was a
blast, and the boys are really fun. So check that one out. On the Adams Division, number 7, Steve Bennett and Peter Winston choose WrestleMania matches in a complicated thought exercise. You Don't Know Billy Jack finds Drew and Jordan talking Bret Hart versus Steve Austin from WrestleMania.
You Don't What Billy Jack?
You Don't Know Billy Jack.
Oh, You Don't Know Billy
Jack. You Don't Fuck With Billy Jack. I think that's what they renamed their show.
I see.
Yeah, so there's lots of WrestleMania content right now on the feed. You can also check out the Place to Be Nation pop feed that has great shows, including the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Diamond Conversations, It Was a Thing on TV, The Year in Pop, Laughing Theater, The Great Debate, Marvel Age, and much more. And you can always check out my feed. It's called The Jenny Position. You can find Geek and Sassy, Freak Out Drive-In, Telling Stories, The Journey Through Infinity, and Talking Pop on my feed. So subscribe to that. Also subscribe to the North-South Connection, brought to you by JT and Chad. It is the new home for Wrestling Warzone, No Holds Barred, The Extreme Three-Way Dance, Jeff Learns Wrestling, and more, including you, Jake. You have a new show coming to that podcast feed. Look at you.
Yes, I do. I'm staying busy. I'm all over
the place. What's it called?
It is going to be called the Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast, and in a similar manner that we do this show, I am going to have a rotating, it's going to be me and one guest each episode, and I'm going to rotate that around, let different people come on, and we are basically going to go through the Ruthless Aggression era of WWE, starting with the first brand split draft, and so I'll cover the Raw and SmackDown for each week, kind of look at those, kind of compare them, and then the pay-per-views will be standalone episodes. So yeah, kind of in a similar way as we do this podcast, because I guess I really like doing this style of thing.
It is very fun, very addicted. I'm glad we got you on the podcasting bug.
I know.
Very good at it.
Bit me.
Got bit by the bug. Yeah.
When does that start?
Should be, the first one should be out next week. I'm recording it this week with a very cool guest.
Awesome. Looking forward
to that. And that's such a great place to pick up to 2001, that brand split. Mm-hmm. Like, that year is so insane. People forget, like, I don't know, the way things are now, you just sort of get used to having two brands, and then they blur those lines, and they do another draft. Like, it's so old hat now, but and back just then, like, there were, like, God, so many false starts. You know, 2002 as a year feels like about four different years, honestly, just because of all the, like, oh, never mind, let's back up, we're going to do this. And, like, they reset so many times, and the talents that sort of get caught up into that mix are pretty interesting, and just some of the combinations that come out of that. Like, you've got Triple H versus Reverend Devon Dudley on a random SmackDown because they're trying to give Devon a singles push. Just wild stuff like that.
All right. Looking forward to it. So you can check that out on the North South Connection podcast feed. And we have officially kicked off our 2020 stretch project. It's determining the greatest WCW match ever. You have all year, or 850 years in 2020 time to do your research, promote your matches, and build your list. So you can find the rules and the conversation at facebook.com/WCW matches, or you can check out the Pro Wrestling Only message board, find all that info. Our greatest sports logo of 2020 tournament is still going on, I believe. So check that out. And also, I heard that the next tournament is going to be about junk food, which I feel like we should call it the fat shit tournament. But
fat shit.
I don't think that Andy will adopt that.
So wait, okay. When you say a junk food tournament, does this mean junk food excluding candy? Because we already did a candy tournament, as you'll recall.
I feel like it does exclude candy.
Okay. Okay, so we're thinking, like,
chips.
Potato chips type stuff. Maybe, like, Little Debbie.
Little Debbie, yeah, Hostess.
Snack cake type thing.
Tasty cake, yeah.
Pringle. Yeah. Ooh, Pringles.
Real fat shit stuff, right?
Real fat shit, salty, sweet, savory. Yeah. Shit.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mm.
So we're all looking forward to that, because
that's
going to
inspire
really, really
a
fat.
Lot of. Yeah, I think that's going to inspire a lot of conversation and debate.
Yeah, probably more than sports logos, but that's just me.
Yeah.
Also, you can check out PlaySpination.com each and every day. We have articles in the topics of worlds of wrestling, sports, and pop culture, including Trent's SmackDown on Fox Report, This Week in the WWE by John Crow, Polly's Perspective, and Ben's Unpopular Opinion, and veteran columns like Glenn Butler's Wednesday Walk Around the Web. And if you're doing online shopping, which is the only shopping you should be unless you're grocery shopping, at Amazon.com, you should click on the Amazon banner on the right side of Place B Nation homepage, and it takes you right to Amazon and helps out PTBN with no cost to you.
Fantastic.
That's all I got.
Well, that's a lot. That's a lot for our listeners to enjoy.
It sure is.
But we have a lot more for our listeners to enjoy as well, because NXT Arrival must continue.
All right. Continuing with the onslaught of packages on this show, we get a Adrian Neville package, which was pretty basic, but I thought it was effective enough, maybe a little bit corny too, but I think he's kind of a, like a, it sounds mean if I say he's a corny character, but I mean like corny kind of in a good way. Like, he's just such a straightforward babyface, and the whole promo is just about him and how he does. He's a really great athlete, and he does a lot of flips and that sort of thing. But it was simple, but I thought it was effective enough. What did y'all think
of?
Yeah,
it's fine.
He's a great Geordie, and if you don't know what a Geordie is, yeah, it's a person from Newcastle.
It's my takeaway.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I thought that was informative. I didn't know what a Geordie was.
I feel like I'd heard that before, but it's not exactly something you commit to memory as an American. So, yeah. Although, wasn't there a takeoff on, God, this is one for the special relations podcast, a takeoff on Jersey Shore called Geordie Shore?
Oh, Lord. Ooh. I hope not.
I think there was.
Only Geordie I know of is from Star Trek, so.
Well, Neville, Adrian, still has a first name. Adrian Neville is a Geordie, as we are told. So, yeah, he's a very wholesome kind of character. But I kind of like this little highlight reel that they did for him. Once again, if you hadn't been introduced to him as a worker previously, you're kind of like, oh wow, you know, this high energy super baby face type of character. Yeah, I could get into that. A lot of high spots. Yeah, seems like he's got all the ingredients there to potentially be a great NXT champion. So he's getting a shot here. Is it even his first opportunity against Bo Dallas? We know he won the Beat the Cock tournament to qualify, of course. So he's had a pretty interesting journey that we've tracked in our episodes to date.
Yeah, so we'll see him compete later on in the night and see if he can, in fact, get that championship. I'm not really sure if he had a title shot before this. That would be impossible to answer. So
there's no way to know.
So next up, we have a match, or at least we think it's going to be a match between Xavier Woods and one of our favorites on here, Tyler Breeze. And Tyler Breeze does get his entrance. So they do get entrances, and Tyler Breeze's entrance is, I think, one of the better ones we've seen out of all these NXT superstars. But before they can really get the match started, Alexander Rusev comes in, crashes the match, beats up both guys, and then locks Xavier Woods in the Accolade. And Xavier does these like blood curdling screams when he's in the Accolade. I thought they were real intense screams, which I get why they did it. They're putting Rusev over because I think Rusev is another guy who is not long for NXT. I think he was already in the Rumble. I think he'll be phased out pretty soon to go on the main roster. So I guess they're just trying to, you know, put him over as a monster. But I have to say I was disappointed that we didn't get any Tyler Breeze in the ring.
Yes.
Yeah, on the one hand, coming out here, I was like, oh, here's Tyler Breeze getting a spot on the show after all. That's pretty cool. We've enjoyed his work. Glad they found a role, even if it's sort of a nothing match against Xavier Woods. That's not a bad pairing. Could produce a good match.
Yep.
And then you're like, yep. Oh, wait, just kidding.
Yep.
And it's weird. I know I've said this before, but I have no recollection of Rusev in NXT. You know, even watching the show live, I did not remember him making an appearance here. Mm-hmm. So that leads me to think, I mean, we can't be in for much more of him. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just no way. He'd already made his main roster debut in the Rumble, you know, back in January. So he's sort of hung out, I think, longer than anyone really anticipated. And I get the whole put him over Xavier, and I really did enjoy Xavier selling, made the Acolyte seem especially sadistic here. Wasn't too crazy about him killing Tyler Breeze's heat, though, at the same time.
Yeah.
as it was. Like, you can do that to Xavier because he didn't really have any heat to kill, but I felt like Tyler should have made, like, the chicken shit retreat, got out of the ring, and, you know.
He's just a weird guy to leave off of this show, I find.
Right. And then just to get wrecked here
by
Rusev.
There was several things I did not like in this whole scenario. Okay. Number one, Rusev's not wearing his doo-doo brown shower curtain that we enjoy so much.
Yep,
number two, I wanted to see Xavier Woods and Tyler Breeze, so that was fucked up.
Yeah.
Number three, all we've ever seen is Rusev doing this accolade to the guys. Like, we've enjoyed it. Like, it's great. But, like, are you going to wrestle, like, a match or just not do that?
And he's in a weird spot because it's like, from what you've seen, you're like, I definitely want to see Rusev on Arrival because he's one of the bigger stars they have in NXT.
Yeah.
But they're in this weird holding period where he's about to move up. So I guess they just don't think it's worth putting him on. It's real weird.
It is super weird. And if they're going to do that, do it to somebody else that's not Tyler Breeze and Xavier Woods that I do kind of want to see. Yeah, do it to CJ Parker, goddammit.
Mm-hmm.
And then Rusev gets on the mic. No. Don't do that. That's what Lana's for.
Yeah.
Why are you talking? We don't understand you. This is pointless. That's why you have a mouthpiece. So sorry about that.
You think he was something we haven't mentioned is throughout this entire show is they keep cutting to all these like legends in the audience.
Like, yes.
I don't know if we got to him yet, but like Larry Zbyszko, Dusty. Cause I was thinking, I don't know if Dusty's working backstage yet, but do you think Dusty's in the back telling Rusev, you got to change the tights, baby. They look like doo-doo.
This is like a doo-doo shower curtain, baby.
You got to get rid of the shower curtain.
Can't have this, baby.
You know Dusty has said doo-doo.
He said doo-doo.
Many, many times throughout his life.
Let the American dream tell you something. You want to get over, you can't wear doo-doo.
You look like doo-doo. My friend.
I did pop for Larry Z in the crowd, though.
Yeah. Okay. So, in our final package of the night, we have Bo Dallas, our heel champion. He is the longest reigning NXT champion to date. I thought this was really funny. It sums up the Bo Dallas character, if you're unfamiliar with him, which I think he is a really fun and interesting heel character. I love all the Photoshops of him and all the various worldwide locations.
Yes.
He says he's well-traveled. He's been around the world. And I also love the thing. The chant is no more Bo, as in the crowd hates him. So no more N-O, but he perceives it as no more Bo, as in K-N-O-W, meaning they just want to know more about their favorite champion, Bo Dallas.
Look at him. Bless his heart.
So it just gives you a quick summation of his deluded heel champion, which I still like. I really like this character. He's like a face who's
more
heel.
More his intentional trolling, we're unsure. And I like the ambiguity in that.
Mm-hmm.
Me too.
I really do.
Any other thoughts? Either on the way, Bill package?
I just enjoy that. Yeah, he's just embraced this character makeover. So if nothing else, it's always good to see a guy all in on his character like that. Not unlike a Tyler Breeze. So props to Bo.
All right, so it's time for our big main event for the title, Adrian Neville versus Bo Dallas. But before that, we get a surprise appearance by the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels, who comes out with the NXT title. I guess to hype up that he is, I forget what they said on commentary, what are the innovators or something of the ladder match, because this is a ladder match. And so he comes out with the title, I guess, just to hype up the match. And like we said earlier, he's a big star who can lend some credibility. The only thing about this is that it went on a little bit too long, and I think he even knew it was going on too long.
He got flustered.
Like, oh. Yeah, he was like, "I got to wrap this up." Like,
he started getting snarky a little bit.
Yeah, he did, and he pulled a fucking DVD out of his fucking pants.
Yeah.
What are we doing, Shawn Michaels?
He's trying to get those last few DVD dollars before the network kills that.
Chilling his DVD.
He's like, "I need money."
It was like Tim's sliding down GIF. I was like, oh, God. Yeah.
You slid out of the chair on that one.
I slid out of the chair GIF on that one.
He had a funny a line in retrospect because he says, "I'm enjoying retirement too much. Like, there's nothing that can get me out of retirement." And it's like, well, the Saudi money apparently got him out of retirement.
He's like, "I had to put my kids through college. Y'all buy this DVD." I'm like, this is not the time or the place, Shawn Michaels, because you just wrap it up.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I get why they bring him out here, but it should have been a lot quicker with him just saying, this is a big deal. NXT's a big deal. Ladder matches are crazy. And then, you know, wrap it up. Any thoughts, awkward. Tim?
Yeah, it was a bit awkward. Although Shawn has a weird awkwardness to him that sort of translates to charisma. I don't know. Had he not really been on camera for a while, I feel
it
like was he
looked like it.
Yeah, because I mean, he had retired. We're coming up on 4 years since his last match here in 2014, and I mean, I certainly don't remember him being around much just as a personality.
I think he may have been in the Daniel Bryan, Randy Orton thing at some point, maybe. Could have been affiliated in that. Right. Yeah, but he definitely, by his own admission, looked out of
sync. Yeah, that was kind of his first. Yeah, that was the first really big program that he participated in. And a lot of people, weren't people wondering or speculating it might lead to a match with him and Bryan? Anyway, yeah, he had done that, but yeah, here it's like he almost felt unsure of himself or uncomfortable, and I was like, that doesn't seem like Shawn Michaels, but I don't know.
I think maybe the crowd reaction maybe threw him off a little bit. Maybe he wasn't expecting that. He was trying to stick to the script, and then the crowd went nuts, and he's like,
And you know what's weird, too, is that they say always that sometimes if you're used to playing to a bigger crowd, that a small crowd can kind of throw you off because it's so much more intimate. So maybe he was thrown off that it's a lot more intimate. Like, they always say sometimes it's easier to talk to 20,000 people than, like, 10 people in a room.
So,
I don't know. Maybe he had that energy. I don't know.
Yeah, I totally found that to be the case when I talked to 20,000 people.
We do get the sign of the night here with the Bocahontas in the crowd.
Bocahontas. Oh, my God.
More like Bocahontas.
I think Shawn was wearing a necklace that his children made for him because it looked like a craft one makes in coronavirus quarantine. You're trying to get your kids to shut the fuck up for 5 minutes.
So, like, arts and crafts is going very well.
Arts
in your
and crafts, Shawn Michaels, yes. Yeah. Here we go.
All right. Well, this is our big title. Uh huh. Okay, what you got?
I called that the sign of the night, but we slept on the Okay. Emma, the animatronic, the Emma matronic.
Oh, God.
Earlier in the women's match, yeah.
That there's no way that dance was over that much. Come on.
It's like a fully functioning marionette sign.
It was so weird.
Once again, probably part of a Full Sail student's art project. That's just
gotta be.
Yeah, could take to this show as a prop.
I love that.
Like, it's something they got an A on, or they're like,
no,
I've got to do this project, but I'm going to a wrestling show right before that, so let me just do something that I can take to the show.
Their senior thesis.
Yeah.
Your thesis. I don't think I'm Emma off dance
for their art degree.
God, I hope not.
I mean, that's something I would do if I was like an art student.
Get the fuck out of here! No, you
probably wouldn't
not.
Be an Emma type deal, but I would try to make something creative to take to a wrestling show. I'd be like, this is my art project. If I was 19 years old, you know.
I love that our show lasts longer than the actual show.
Yeah, I think we've crossed that threshold.
There's a lot to unpack here.
Yeah, so much.
All right. Are we ready for this main event?
Let's do it.
I think our listeners are. We have any luck. At this point,
so our listeners could actually watch a show, just like
could be a live watch.
We could have just done a commentary watch along, right?
We should, because
I think we were way too long on Cesaro.
we wouldn't have allowed our thoughts to marinate properly, you know, to come up with such quality content here.
That's true.
Okay,
so big ladder match. So my summation of this match, I thought it was real. I thought they never really went into like the real high gear you need for like a classic, like we saw in the first match. But I thought it was very, very good for a ladder match. I really liked Bo kind of worked in his character, and in the whole first part, he was trying to like trap Neville in like a really cheap way, like ring him up in the ropes or something, like to try and get a quick victory. I thought a lot of the ladder stuff was real organic. I really liked the way they integrated the ladder. It wasn't a ton of crazy spots or anything. It was a lot of like them playing tug of war with the ladder and shoving it into each other. There was a cool spot where Neville kind of leapfrogs off the ropes while Bo is climbing the ladder and goes ahead of him. A lot of cool stuff like that. In the end, Neville hits the red arrow while Bo's on the ladder, like as he's laying on the ladder on the mat. Yeah. And that pretty much takes out Bo.
Lands right on its dick too.
It's awesome.
They said on commentator's ribs, but yeah, it was right in the crotch. Yeah.
Hits him right in the dick.
Red arrow right in the crotch.
Red arrow straight across the dick.
But I thought it was really good. I thought the commentary was really good. Like Regal was getting super hyped because thought the match he's really into because Neville is his, I guess, his countryman. So he's really happy. But in the end, Neville, after the Red Arrow, gets up the ladder, gets the title, and he is the new NXT champion. Again, I thought this was very good. Maybe not great. I went 3 3/4. But a satisfying match and definitely a solid main event.
I went 3 1/4 stars because I felt like they both talked about it in their video packages, how they'd never done a ladder match before. And I thought that that showed their inexperience, showed a bit, and especially using the ladders because they didn't know how to integrate it with the other wrestling. You know, it got better as it went. Like, they figured it out as they went. But initially, it was very awkward. Like, Bo did some cool things where he just, like, tied up Neville in the ropes to try to, like, keep him there so he can go get a ladder. I thought that was pretty inventive. Well, not inventive, probably, but just clever. And he would do these like cool little like pitting spots, like trying to keep Neville pinned down and like localized so that Neville couldn't flip and fly on him or climb the ladder. So it was pretty smart on Bo's part, but like you said, it never really got in that great territory. Not disappointing, but just a little bit lackluster, just because I really enjoyed everything that they've done to this point to build up to it. I really loved the build to this match, and I kind of wish it wasn't a ladder match. I kind of either wish it was either just a straight match, 2 out of 3 falls maybe might be good here, or something that
a boneyard match.
A bolt for sure. because you want to see Neville fly, right? He does that, and he only gets like 2 or 3 like little spots, and it's good that he finishes with it, but I just feel like this ladder match doesn't really work for these wrestlers, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm pretty much in there with you. I went 3 3/4 like Jake. So sort of like, it's hard to have a truly bad ladder match. It's sort of one of those matches that takes care of itself. And you have a general baseline of quality there. But I do think it was short of great. So it's like not 4 stars. And when you put a high flyer like Neville in a ladder match, you're expecting like a lot of high spots, right?
Exactly.
And
yeah,
you're thinking, oh shit, he's going to like hit the red arrow off the top of the ladder and it's going to be incredible. And he doesn't. And that's fine. Because you hate to see a situation where like he could win the match, but then he goes for the high spot. Like that's a Jeff Hardy thing to do. And it works for that sort of character, but it wouldn't make a lot of sense for Neville. So I appreciated that he worked a smarter match than just kind of your dumb babyface high flyer daredevil type of performer. I think it did give some much needed differentiation between him and those sorts of dudes. But you still want, I don't know, a little bit more
something
to it. Yeah. And it was pretty just formulaic as a ladder match. Certainly not bad. But as I said, short of great, pretty cool finish. He still gets his move in with that red arrow, which always looks spectacular, whether it's from the top of a ladder or from the the top rope. And Bo, God, he had to be hurting after that thing.
For sure.
Across the ladder and the way it landed, just pretty convincing finish there. It's his tallywhacker is going to be aching for days.
Regal was really good. Like he had the line about towards the end, like he's got to be ripping his nails out.
Good one.
Yeah, it was good stuff. But I thought it was a good. I think part of the ladder match thing is probably the visual of, because it is Neville finally winning the championship. Like it's a nice visual to have him at the top of the ladder grabbing the belt, I guess.
For sure.
And like Tim said, it's a hard match. Like it's got a low floor, I guess. So it's going to be for this first big event. And I guess Bo is not seen as maybe like his ring work is maybe not on the same level as his character work, sort of. So maybe they thought it was a good way to make sure, like, look, if we put Neville in this ladder match, it can only be so, it's got to be so good.
It doesn't rely on Bo Dallas having to do a whole lot. And for what offense he has, he can kind of be using the ladder as a weapon, you know? So, you know, I thought it was a pretty good match for both of them. And you always enjoy seeing them pull the trigger on a guy when they have a good opportunity to do so. I'm glad they didn't try to drag this out to like another show. Like it, they're just sort of like, yep, Neville's our guy now. Dallas is great. Bo Dallas is a great character. But his time is up. So we're moving on. And, I'm never going to fault a promotion for actually pulling the trigger on someone who's over, you know?
I can't. Sadly, I don't see Neville being a. I mean, I could be totally wrong, but I just don't see him being a long-term champion. I don't know. We'll see, I guess.
I think he works for NXT at this point because he's obviously a super. He maybe is not the most compelling character, but I think they can rely on him to go out there because they're obviously kind of building this brand a little bit on, you know, the ring stuff. And I think right now they can depend on him to go out there and, you know, if he's your champion, he's going to go out there and put on a good match in the main event, you know? So I guess they feel like that's,
good enough.
I guess it's, But I thought it was satisfying enough. What did y'all think of like the moment? Y'all thought it was a decent moment. I thought it was pretty good.
It was a good moment. Feel good moment.
For
the first big show, you know, I guess you want to send them home happy.
Yeah.
What have definitely. You.
Exactly.
All right. Well, that will wrap up NXT Arrival. Let's talk about our overall thoughts. I thought, obviously, not a perfect show. We had some kind of junk kind of in the middle. And I think you could still tell they're trying to figure out what their identity is going to be. Like, is this going to be about putting on classic matches? Is it about characters? Is it about goofiness? Is it going to be only NXT people? How big of a role do the main roster people come in? But I think there were three big matches built going into it, and I think they all delivered pretty well, as much as could be expected, including one match that's like an all-timer. I thought it was a well-put-together card because even though we had the junk, it didn't seem to like drag the show down too much. I think if you would watch this as somebody coming in new to NXT, I definitely think it would hook you and make you want to watch it more after watching this. So I thought it did what it was supposed to do. And, you know, those three matches take up the vast majority of the show, and they were all good to great to classic. So I don't know. I went 8 out of 10 on this first NXT big special event. Pay-per-view thing.
That is very generous. And you're right. I mean, you're right. All of your points are valid. I just felt like it was more in the 7 range for me.
Yeah, I think 7 sounds appropriate. And a lot of that is just having the benefit of hindsight and knowing like how subsequent takeovers would rate. Some would say we've had 10 out of 10.
We have
shows. So, on the basis of that comparison, I don't think I'm willing to go like an 8 out of 10, but 7 seems all right. I mean, I would agree that the three matches that this event was sold on, so to speak, that needed to deliver did deliver. Maybe we found that main event could have been a bit more, but it's certainly not a match that is lacking or you feel let down by any means. It definitely accomplished its job, and you saw a title change, so that's pretty cool. And man, I just to think of someone who is an NXT fan today and is really used to what the NXT product is now and watches and loves the pay-per-views that they're doing nowadays. And you think to yourself, I wonder what it was like in the beginning. Like, let me watch the first takeover just to compare. And this is not a takeover, but it's kind of the equivalent of what takeover is now. And from the jump, that very first match, you get Sami Zayn, Cesaro, you know, 4.5 stars, or higher, debatably. And you're like, okay, just as Jacob was saying, it really sets the tone. You go, wow, it really was kind of at this high level going back 6 years now. And there is some junk in the middle, yes. However, that just is owed to NXT's identity at the time and that transformation that's taking place. I know that watching this live, there wasn't any point where I thought, oh God, they're really dying out there. You know, it was a really easy show to watch. Kept me engaged. Yeah. I stayed pretty hyped, as Mojo Rawley stays hyped. And I was game for this show. And while I didn't love every single match, it was the type of product and presentation that made me think, yeah, I do want to see more of this.
And I think that could be maybe why, like, I guess if I'm giving it a bonus point, it could be just for the fact that they came out right at the gate and put something like not a 10 out of 10, but they obviously established like NXT can put out really good shows. And I think like establish itself as it's not just the main roster watered down. It's kind of its own sort of unique thing. And it's it's not just a developmental, you know?
Right.
And so I could be giving a bonus point.
Like something
different.
And it succeeded as something different on its first outing. There is a lot to be said for their first show being a win. Like if this had been sort of a lot of good, just as much bad, it's real hit and miss, we'd still probably be saying there's some growing pains. It's fine. We'll keep watching. But I mean, I would really consider this a win. There was far more bad than good than bad. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
So that does, I think you're right. It counts for quite a lot. Again, I'm not giving it the nudge beyond a 7 out of 10, but that's more of just my bias of knowing what's to come, I think.
And I should point out here at the end of our show, as opposed to the beginning of our show, that if you want to watch NXT Arrival, there are two different versions on the network.
Okay, yes.
And there is the 2-hour show, which is what you should watch, and there's an abbreviated 1-hour show where it just shows Sammy versus Cesaro and then the ladder match, because I was like watching the abbreviated one and they went from Sammy and then they went to the ladder match and I'm like, pretty sure that's the main event, so
unload the chamber,
shit happening. I'm like, this ain't right. So definitely watch the full version so you can watch Paige and Emma, because you should watch that.
Yeah. Okay. Are we ready for...
Did that. I remember that being
super weird. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those early kind of network experiments, I think, where they were like, here's... Like, if you just... Maybe they thought that people who had never watched wrestling before... Like, it didn't know
how to sit there for another hour. Like, I don't know.
Maybe they thought that they were signing up, doing their free trial WWE network, and maybe like, they really thought that and said,
to give people time. Uh-huh.
Yeah, like a 2-hour show, it's too intimidating. So here's just the hour version with the best, what we would consider the must-see type of matches. I don't know.
And like that, it's like people have to use the idea that like everything they're going to run on here now is just immediately archived and that you can go watch it whenever you want. It's not like pay-per-view where once it's gone, I guess if you taped it or DVR'd it or whatever, you have it, but it's like, you know, you can just go find it the day after if you want. Like it was kind of still new to everybody. So I guess they figured like people were still thinking, well, NXT's on Wednesdays at, you know, 8 o'clock or whatever. And that I guess maybe they have to like wean people into like, no, you don't have to watch NXT on Wednesday. You can watch it whenever the hell you want. Like,
yes.
All right.
We were so naive back then, Jake.
Weren't we?
We didn't even know how to do streaming networks. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Some still don't.
I know. Anyway. I was going to say.
But anyway, okay. Quickly, awards. I don't think these are going to be too much discussion on these.
Nah.
Best match?
Cesaro, Sammy.
Yep.
Yeah, opener.
MVP?
I went with Sammy.
Same.
Yeah, I think we have to.
LVP, least valuable player, I'll probably go, I don't want to give it to Too Cool because they're just kind of here for one show, but if you want to, you can. I won't judge you, but I think I'm going to go, my boy CJ Parker as usual.
Yeah, me too.
I'll probably go Mojo just again because
Mojo beat him. What are you talking about?
Yeah, but I still think he just sucks. it's like your hate they for hyped. Your irrational hate for Jason Jordan, I believe it was.
You're right.
on one of our
Jason shit, Jordan like, burial.
Yeah, your Jason Jordan burial for just completely no unwarranted. Yeah,
I'm racist. That's why.
Best moment. I would have Neville's winning the title. Yeah.
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 All right. And then I think our people are rising are pretty obvious. Neville, Sammy, and I would say I'll give a little nod to Emma too after that match.
I had Emma, surprisingly, yes.
Yeah, I can see that. She looks pretty good even in defeat. Yep.
And falling, I would probably say the Ascension, which maybe not is totally their fault. They just need opponents, but I think the Ascension and I guess the usual suspects, but it's like how much further can CJ Parker fall, but I guess he would probably be falling too.
I picked Bo for this too. I don't think he showed up that well on the ladder match, and you know his whole thing has come crashing around him, so definitely falling.
It does leave you with the impression of where do you go with him from here?
Yep.
So, yeah, I would agree. Like, nothing he really did wrong. It's just you've maybe exhausted his potential in this environment. I don't know. Yep.
Makes sense. All right. Well, that will wrap up this very important episode. I thought it was a really good show, and I'm very interested to see where they go in the network era. Now that we're moving on to the network, and it's clear that they are like pushing this as probably their like top content on the network at this time, original content. So, all right, you guys got anything to plug? Final thoughts?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Jenny Position and my Facebook page, The Jenny Position. Also have shows on the Place Beauty Nation wrestling feed, which is this feed. They are called Jenny and the Gems. And I have that special relations episode that is out right now. And I think that's it.
We will, you and I, Jenny, have an episode of Talking WCW coming up pretty soon on the aforementioned Place We Nation wrestling feed with our friend Greg Phillips. Going to be watching, talking about some Battle Bowl.
Battle Bowl?
Yeah. More like Battle Bowl, right?
Am I right?
Ladies and gentlemen, I apologize. you and I, again, Jenny, have on your feed, the Jenny Position, Talking Pop, a new episode.
Tomorrow.
So okay, it should be tomorrow out. As of the date of this recording. So you should find that available already by the time you're hearing this.
Talking Pop Live.
Talking Pop Live. That's right. We did a live episode of Talking Pop. It was, we got into a lot. I mean,
we did
pretty all over the place, but such is the nature of an interactive podcast. And that was a lot of fun. And you can, follow me on Twitter. I am at psyche68, C-Y-K-E 68. And I think that's probably it for me.
Oh, I forgot. I have something special that is not part of our usual family of networks. I hooked up with this podcast called The House of D. And
House of D.
House of D. Yes. And it's the... So it's Rex Manning Day on April 8th, which is tomorrow on this recording day. And so he was kind of putting out a call to, like, does anybody want to watch Empire Records with me and talk about it? So I was like, hey, I love that movie. And I'd never met him before. And I just went on the show and we talked about it. It was really fun. And so check him out on Twitter and on Podbean and wherever. It's called The House of D. And he does tons of movies and comics and TV shows and all that kind of stuff. So it's good stuff. Check that out.
Cool deal. And of course, I am... you can find me on Twitter at Jambalaya_Jake. And like I mentioned earlier, look for a new podcast. I'm doing the Ruthlessly Aggressive podcast, chronicling the ruthless aggression era of WWE, which should be coming in the next week or so on the North South Connection podcast. And that's pretty much all I got. So at this point, I think it's time for all of us to get pneumonia.
Pneumonia.
What?
I heard you on the wire back in 52.
They say.
Lying awake, intently tuning in on you. If I was young, it didn't stop you coming through.